From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. As you know, here at Scared Monkeys, a lot of our programming here on the radio show or at the blog, we deal with crime victims, high-profile crime. There's another blog out there called the Jawa Report that deals with terrorism. Now, there's no bigger crime than terrorism, and Red and I thought it would be kind of cool to bring the guy that's behind the Jawa Report on to talk about that. Rusty, good evening, sir.
Hi, Dan.
Nice to have you. Tell the folks about the Jawa Report.
The Jawa Report is my blog. We discuss terrorism-related issues. You know, we also discuss other, whatever comes to mind as well.
Now blogging is something. I've been doing this show now 12 years, and of course, when I started the show, the Internet was around, but we didn't hear much about bloggers. But bloggers are out doing mainstream media every day. We're hearing stories about, the Jihad Jane and everything that you've covered on your blog, but we're not hearing it the way that you're reporting it. I call the difference between the two. Ours is main street media, and what they do is mainstream media, and we only get bits and bytes from them. Tell us what your thoughts are between what you do and what mainstream media does.
I don't know if there's much of a difference. The only difference is they get paid more, maybe. To be honest, this week I spent a lot of time on the phone with reporters. And I think the way they find me is when they have a story they think they want to cover, the first thing they do is Google.
Right.
So they find me.
Yep.
And so that's what I do. So I'm not sure how much different. The difference, of course, would just be our spin and our focus, probably.
Yeah, and you're right. The spin and the focus. And Red finds it, too, at Scared Monkeys, that the networks are cherry-picking from blogs like yours, like his, and that's where they're getting their stories from. I found it fascinating to read about your coverage on the Jihad Jane and the other one. Tell us a little bit about that story.
About the Jihad Jane story?
Right.
Her real name is Colleen LaRose, and she's from Pennsylvania, suburban Pennsylvania. And your listeners may know that she was picked up coming back from Europe and arrested and charged with, in the indictment, if you read the indictment, she was part of a larger worldwide plot to kill a cartoonist in Sweden named Lars Vilks.
Right.
Lars Vilks, a few years ago, was one of these people who drew a picture of the Prophet Muhammad.
I remember.
And he put his head on the top of a dog. And a year or a couple of years ago, Al-Qaeda, in one of their videos, said they wanted Lars Vilks killed. So, and they wanted to kill him as kind of a message so this is classic terrorism, to kill him to send a message to the world that you do not blaspheme Muhammad. And so she was involved in this plot, and she had stolen she had a boyfriend here. She had stolen his passport and met someone over in Europe and was going to use her. She's blonde. Going to use her U.S. passport and her unassuming kind of features to kind of blend in. Part of the plot was this other person she knew on the internet was going to try to get, could not get a visa to the U.S., mm-hmm. was going to try to get a visa to go to Europe using her American visa, and she would actually then maybe marry him so that, and she would live in Europe, and so he could get residency there. So there's this kind of a wider plot going on here.
Yeah, it has spiraled, and in fact, I'm just looking at your page here now. You've got an update on Jihad Jamie. Fill us in.
Jamie is a friend of Jihad Jane. Jihad Jane was actually one of the names she used online, by the way.
Right.
This girl, Jamie, was a friend of Jihad Jane's from YouTube, and had married someone from Algeria. And she moved to Ireland, married someone from Algeria. Again, probably there's something going on here too that she was probably trying to help him get residency there as well. And she was released actually, and she's from Colorado. originally from Kansas, I believe, and recently from Colorado. And she disappeared about last year, about the same time that Colleen the Rose did. And she's been released, though. Her husband, though, is still in jail, and he was probably involved in the plot, too. There were seven in Ireland who were arrested originally. Five or more released, but they may be charged later this week sometime.
You know, our listeners and the readers of your blog and the listeners to the show and the readers of the Scared Monkeys blog and all those out there, we follow these things, but Joe and Mary Sixpack, I like to call them, who sit back and watch Dancing with the Stars at night and then the CBS News, they don't really pay much attention to this, but there's a big problem out here, and starting September 11th did it become very prevalent that we learned about it, but it's been going on for quite some time. I'd like to get your take on, you know, terrorism and counterterrorism, about what the government's doing and what the people know and what they should know.
Let's be more specific about that. Okay, I'm trying. It's a big topic.
Right. Well, yeah. What I'm getting at is most people don't even realize that half of this stuff is going on, you know, unless they are a reader of the blog. And of course, the internet covers so much. But a lot of people, and again, I like to call them Joe and Mary Sixpack, they just don't understand half of what's going on. And I want you to share with my audience a little bit about the problems that are out there that maybe we're not hearing about.
Sure. One of the things that I deal with on my blog, and I deal with kind of on the side, out, you know, behind the scenes as well, not necessarily public. Not all this is actually public. Some of this we do behind the scenes, myself and my fellow co-bloggers and readers, is monitor jihadist websites.
Right.
And what many of your listeners may not be aware of is that Al-Qaeda itself has actual production arm. And they actually have a media arm. And this media arm, they actually release their videos through a distribution network. And this distribution network is actually online.
Right.
These online jihadis or online jihadis, they consider themselves part of Al-Qaeda, part of this larger network. And even if they don't carry guns, they don't carry bombs, most of them just are on the internet. And so they see their idea, they see their role within the organization as to spread this propaganda. And so that's one of the things we look at. They also use YouTube, and Jihad Jane herself used YouTube extensively. She used at least 27 different accounts to spread Al-Qaeda propaganda, but also what was a little different about her was, to be honest, you know, I've been telling everyone in the media this, I didn't really take her seriously. I knew who she was a couple years ago, tracked her down, lots of people tracked her down. She was she wasn't very careful with her private information, so it was easy to connect her YouTube account with a real person. Made fun of her mostly because I thought she might be a little off kilter.
Yeah.
And just, she was kind of pathetic, to be honest. But, you know, I think I made the classic mistake a lot of law enforcement people do, or people in intelligence, that they don't take real threats seriously because it's hard sometimes to tell by their online persona. For instance, Nidal Hassan, right?
Right.
Your listeners probably know who he was, right?
Absolutely.
He is the Fort Hood shooter. He killed, oh boy, how many people ended up dying from that?
Yeah.
The law enforcement and intelligence were aware that he was communicating with this Al-Qaeda preacher in Yemen named Anwar al-Awlaki, and they didn't take him seriously, and they decided, you know what, he's not a threat. We're just going to drop looking into him. And just like, you know, myself, I my associates at the Jihad Report, Howie and Stablehand, were very adamant about Jihad Jane. I wasn't. I just thought she was a joke. And I think we need to probably take people maybe that we think are a joke a little more seriously.
There is a bigger picture to that, and from what you're doing, the perspective also with the government, and I'm not sure if you know that I'm also in law enforcement, and when you look at intelligence or you work with intelligence is only as good as what you're going to do with it. Like, if you look at it and file it away, and not act on it. But you're right. Hassan is a good example of that, and we've covered it many times on the show here with people from the FBI and profilers that no one really took him seriously, and you just don't know. And I guess that goes to my next question. When you do this and you track these people, that's my term, have you had contact with them? I know Red can, I'm sure, tell many stories, and myself too. There's the dark side out there that we can track them, but they can also track us, and we'll hear from them lots too.
Yeah, I mean, I hear from them all the time. Sometimes get death threats. That's why, you know, Rusty's not my real name.
Right. No, I understand.
I get death threats. So, yeah, you know, they do contact me, and I've been in contact with several people who are now in jail, and glad they're there. And lots of other people who I would like to see in jail or dead.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. Yeah, they have never been able to track my real-world identity, thankfully, yet, I don't think.
And that's
I have lots of guns. I'm in America, so I have lots of guns, so, you know.
And that's good. If you're just tuning in, Rusty is here from the Jawa Report, and we're talking terrorism and what he does with his blog. You know, when we've seen these stories like Jihad Jane and Jamie and the Hassan and all the other stories that we have out there, and the response from the government, so to speak, comparing the Obama administration to the Bush administration and the politics involved, how much do you cover that side of it? Because it is a big political issue also.
Well, we do, obviously. I think all of us there are either conservative or libertarian. So, yeah, we cover it. And I'll be honest with you. I think that most of the law enforcement and intelligence actions that deal with terrorism are separate from any administration, that these are professionals. So whoever's in office, I think they generally do their best. And I think at the kind of the base level, the street level, those who are actually interacting with criminals, those who are actually interacting with terrorists, those who are actually tracking them, I think whoever's in office doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah. It's the guy on the street, whether they're with the CIA or whether they're doing counterintelligence work, whatever, the figurehead really doesn't matter, whatever your political beliefs are. I agree with you totally. I'm looking at some stuff here about one thing is the Dallas Tea Party address. What's going on with that? We've done a lot of Tea Party stuff here too.
I don't know, to be honest. I don't really follow that much. So we have one blogger who's in Texas, and so he's really plugs away at that. I don't follow that too much. Sorry about that.
Well, we
need to say just a little more about Jihad Jane, okay?
Yeah, sure. Yep.
You know, we're talking about your law enforcement and what the government's reaction is. Let me just say that in her case, the system worked really well. And in the Nadal Hassan case, it didn't work very well, right? Her case, it did. I already told you, I did not take her seriously. I made a lot of jokes at her expense. I knew a lot of people who interacted with her on YouTube. She was very active in the comment section of her own video pages or on other people's video pages. I didn't take her seriously, but at some point last year, there's another group that I'm associated with. It's the YouTube Smackdown.
Mm-hmm.
And the YouTube Smackdown people there, what they do is, they go to YouTube and they flag videos which are Al-Qaeda propaganda or other terrorist propaganda in an effort to try to pressure YouTube to take down these videos. Well, not one of their members, but someone affiliated with them, kind of like I am, saw some of the stuff she was writing, got a little nervous about what she was writing. She was writing things like that she wanted to raise money for the Mujahideen, for terrorists, basically. And this individual, notified the FBI, and the FBI followed through on it, interviewed Miss Jihad Jane, apparently started following her emails, tracked her down, and they arrested her before the plot could come to fruition. So in this case, citizens watching, you know, just like any other citizen on the street would see a crack deal going down, would call the police. If you see this kind of stuff, the FBI, they want to know.
Absolutely. The eyes and ears of the people, that's the important thing. I ask other bloggers this, Rusty, and we can tie this into the G.I. Jane reporting or what you just do in your blog, is regulation of the Internet. You know, the YouTube busters, I think that's great. The Internet's excellent, a lot of good things, but there's also a lot of bad things, too, and it gives a platform for those that want to go out and throw out that propaganda. And there's been a big call to censor, to regulate. I personally don't believe in that. I'm curious on what you think.
Well, you're probably going to be surprised, but I'm actually for it. I'm not for regulation in general or for censorship in general, but in the context of war, I think that if you control the means by which your enemy recruits, propagandizes, raises money, then you need to use that tool for your own purposes and not deny it to them. I'm not sure about censorship as much as it is insisting that in a time of war that people in your country support your country and support its troops. Now, the way you do that is by making sure that this propaganda isn't online. But, so, I mean, I think this is just part of a broader war effort.
And well said. You know, that's a very good point. If you're just tuning in, Rusty is here from the Jawa Report for about another 3-4 minutes. When you talk about this, and I agree with you, by the way, when it comes down to, you know, protecting the people, that's the important thing, and that goes to, you know, child predators, to this terrorism stuff, to you name it. But what would get you into something like this? And I know when I first interviewed Red, I asked him the same question. What does a guy, I'm sure you have a day-to-day life also, but something like this keeps you very busy. What got you into this?
There was an American civilian in Iraq. His name was Nick Burke. And Al-Qaeda in Iraq, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, beheaded him and videotaped it and put it on the Internet.
Yep.
And this, it enraged me. I'd seen death before, but, you know, on TV, it's not the same. Real people, a person really being murdered versus whatever they're doing on TV, it's not the same. And it hit me at a visceral level. And so from that time on, I've really been focusing on, what the enemy is doing, what kind of propaganda are they using, what devices, and what are the means that they're using to distribute this propaganda.
That's a good point, yeah. And you know what? I can remember seeing that, too, and it just, you know, made the hair on the back of your neck stand up, and you want to do what you can to try and assist or try and stop. I guess my last question to you is we try to get the point out to the folks, no matter what it is. If you, like you say, you see a crack deal going down, if you suspect someone is beating their wife or is a sexual predator or whatever, call the cops, call the FBI, do what you can. How do you get them to take you seriously? You know, you all of a sudden you say, I'm corresponding with this nut who says that she's talking about terrorism and doing all that sort of stuff. How do you get them to take you seriously?
I think first of all, you'd probably need to document what has happened, and that'll help. I think if you just call in and say, you know, one of the problems with the internet is you get a lot of people saying a lot of stupid and mean things on the internet. So I think you yourself, first of all, if you're seeing this, you need to step back, give it some time, and say, see, is this just some Muslim venting? Or is this someone who is saying these things over and over and over again? And in the case of G.I. Jane, she had 27 YouTube accounts, but the YouTube SmackDown crew was able to get her suspended 27 times. And by her coming back after each suspension, you could tell she was kind of committed to what she was saying, right?
Right.
So I think if your viewers, or your listeners, I'm sorry, see this kind of behavior repeated over and over and over again, then you can probably start to differentiate between just the normal online flame wars that go on, these normal bad things people say on the internet, versus kind of people who are actively trying to spread propaganda, actively trying to reinforce the worldview of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. And just document it, take photographs of it. You can do that online, take little online photographs of what's going on. And then contact your local FBI office if you think it's serious.
Absolutely. It's a good point, and I got to share this with you, Rusty, just before I let you go, and I really appreciate you coming on. Red says, ask Rusty his opinion of trying KSM in criminal court versus the tribunal, and also tell him from Red and Outreaders that we really appreciate videos of blowing up terrorists. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool, too. So a quick comment on KSM, criminal court versus the tribunal.
We call those videos war porn, by the way.
Yeah.
We love them. I support military tribunal for KSM, especially for those who perpetrated 9/11 and other mass murders like that. Seems to me those are acts of war. And for acts of war, you try them in military courts, just like we did in Nuremberg, just like we did in Tokyo. And these aren't regular, normal criminals. They go beyond normal criminality. And so I would like to see them tried in military courts. Now, having said that, if they try them in civilian courts, as long as at the end of the day they're dead, that they get the death penalty, I think the process is not as important as the end result.
Yeah, as long as the end fits the means, or however they say that. Listen, Rusty, I appreciate it. It's a Jawa Report. Click on the show notes to get to that blog. It's a great blog, and I appreciate the work you're doing and coming on the show. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Rusty from the Jawa Report. And we're going to take a break and come back in a minute here on Scared Monkeys Radio with Diane Diamond from Entertainment Tonight. We're going to talk about her recent story on John Edwards, which I happened to catch on Entertainment Tonight, and another Hollywood death, the actor Corey Haim. Looks like it was a prescription drug issue, and more craziness happening in Hollyweird land. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. My favorite ET correspondent, Diane Diamond, is in storm-ravaged section of the United States, but she is so nice to come on the air tonight. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Dana. How are you? Oh, boy, we have had more rain in upstate New York here, and that's been our problem. Roads are closed and big trees are down. And anyway, I'm glad to be with you.
Well, you and hubby get your water wings on and take care of yourself out there.
Exactly. No, we're fine now. It's just some of the roads are still closed and, you know, cleanup begins. So how have you been?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. And I want to compliment you, first of all, on your story tonight on E.T., on John Edwards. And I want to start with that. Speaking of crazy stuff, how crazy is that?
Well, it is. You know, I've been following the John Edwards story for a long time, and I've gotten to know Andrew Young, the man who wrote the book The Politician, about John Edwards and his fall from grace. And frankly, I've gotten to know him because nobody else in this saga is talking.
Right.
John Edwards isn't talking, his wife Elizabeth, and of course the mistress, Riel Hunter, she hasn't been talking either for like the last 4 years until yesterday.
Yeah.
When GQ magazine did a big spread on her, not only a long article, but all these photographs of her posing seductively with stuffed animals and her man's shirt and little else on. And so I thought it would be the perfect time to go back to Andrew Young and say, hey, what do you make of all this? And that was the genesis of the Entertainment Tonight pieces. And then I also write frequently for thedailybeast.com, and I have the last 2 days posted long articles on that, quoting Andrew and other information I've learned quite extensively.
Yeah, it's kind of a play on words to Daily Beast when you talk about John Edwards. But anyway, Riel Hunter posing with Kermit the Frog with her Arrow shirt on does nothing for her credibility. And now I think she did a big oops and is saying, I didn't like that. I didn't approve that. I'm against that, all that sort of stuff. But really, nobody's buying that, are they?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, this is a woman who made her living being the videographer for John Edwards. I mean, she knows what a camera can capture, and she knows it because she's been a professional in that business. And so now for her to come forward and say to us, you know, in her mind she wanted to be accepted by the American people, I'm sure, for her to come forward now and say, oh, gee, golly, I'm shocked at those pictures. Well, what did she think was going to happen when she took her pants off and posed with just a man's shirt on? You know, I don't think the general public is that gullible.
What I thought was fascinating, and we're going to switch topics here in a second, is it was hinted very strongly that Mr. Edwards may have had a couple of more girlfriends, or did I read that wrong?
No, you did not read that wrong. That was one of my big scoops today. Andrew Young's told quite a bit of the John Edwards folklore in his book, The Politician, but I got more out of him, I think, today than anybody else has. When I said to him, all right, this is a man who within, you know, a few hours of meeting this woman is already in bed with her in a hotel in New York City, it says to me, this is a man who's used to behaving like this. And he said, well, yes. And I said, really? I mean, were there other women? Oh, yes. He said, there were other real types out there. And the senator admitted it to him. And now, in retrospect, Andrew Young says, you know, I should have picked up on some of the clues. The women in the hotel rooms, the phone calls that he took, the way he disappeared at 2 o'clock in the morning from a hotel we were in to, quote, go jogging.
Yeah.
He said, now I realize there were quite a few women.
Yeah, he was jogging all right, that's for sure. Diane.
he was sweating somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Diane Diamonds here. You know her as a longtime crime and entertainment reporter, most recently doing segments on Entertainment Tonight and her column on The Daily Beast. I wanted to bring you on tonight to talk about another Hollywood death, this time Canadian actor who spent a lot of time in the United States in the late 80s, early 90s doing movies, Corey Haim. Looks like another prescription drug thing. Your thoughts on his passing?
Well, you know, my heart goes out to these kids.
Yeah.
And that's really, I mean, we look at them and we look at his picture at the time of his death, and he looks like a man, but he's a kid that grew up in Hollywood who knew no other way of life. And, you know, we see it time and time again. It's not just with Corey. It's with so many of these young people who just get slathered in the attention and the money. I heard an old interview with him in which he said, you know, I made so much money and I lost so much money just taking drugs, just buying drugs with it. And I don't know the cause of death now. His mother seems to say that he was on the mend. He was just ill. He had a bad cold and a high fever, and, you know, maybe his kidneys gave out. But, you know, Dana, so many years, it's like Michael Jackson. It's like so many others we see, so many years of misusing drugs in your body, and your body just can't withstand like a simple flu.
Yeah, and you're right. And when you look at this, and it's almost these actors and their sense of entitlement where they can go doctor shopping, and there's some alleged doctor shopping with Corey Haim and some OxyContin issues. Again, all alleged. Nothing's been proven for sure yet. And you look at poor Brittany Murphy, and her husband is stepping up saying, don't compare her to Corey Haim. She was just sick. You know, we can go on and on. Jackson, Heath Ledger, Anna Nicole Smith, you name it. Again, it's this sense of entitlement from these actors. And do they need it? Don't they need it? The addiction problem. We never heard this so much in the. And I've interviewed a few. Stan Livingston, for example, who starred on My Three Sons in the 50s and 60s. And in those days, he was afraid of Fred McMurray catching him smoking a cigarette. But today, these guys are just gone totally off the deep end, and our young people are looking at them and using them as their role models. What's wrong with the young people in Hollywood?
Well, they are tragically, in my mind, victims of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then they get caught up in this. And, you know, it's an illness. I don't blame an ill person for being ill. You know what I think, though, because I spend an awful lot of time in California and Hollywood, because that's where Entertainment Tonight is based, I see a real change of attitude among law enforcement now in California, starting with the Attorney General. He's got this new way of tracking every single prescription in the state of California. A copy of it comes into his office, and they keep track now. And it all stems from the Anna Nicole Smith case.
Right.
You know, they have indicted three people, her boyfriend and two doctors, for giving her, aiding and abetting, an addict. And, you know, what I think needs to happen, you know, just my personal opinion, is more of these doctors need to be charged
yep.
for allowing themselves or willingly stepping up to be these shopping doctors. Oh, what do you need? You need Valium, you need Demerol, you need, you know, what do you need? OxyContin, here's 4 months worth.
Yeah.
That's not allowed. It's a violation of federal law. And I think until we start stopping it at the source, which is the prescriber, it's just going to keep going on.
Yeah, I agree with you. Diane Diamond's here, Entertainment Tonight correspondent. And, you know, your old partner, Geraldo Rivera, started many years ago looking into Elvis Presley's death and the over-prescribing then, and it's just continued on. But it seems like until now, the people in charge, the legislators, they'd slap the doctor's wrists and take his license away from them, but there's a serious problem there. And when we look at Conrad Murray and Michael Jackson, and you've probably done the best coverage on Michael Jackson out of everyone, in my opinion, will we see Conrad Murray actually get punished out of this? I'm not so sure.
Well, I'm not either, and I'll tell you, I think that would be a shame.
I agree.
I do think the doctor got caught up in the tragic web of Michael Jackson. You know what I mean? And like so many doctors, they take this oath to do no harm and to help the patients. And I'm sure, I mean, he told the police right after the death, I was trying to wean him off these drugs.
Yeah.
Really? Well, why were you even giving him propofol, an anesthetic, in a private home? Without monitors, you know, they may get overwhelmed with the desire to help their patients, but it's not helping patients. And so in Dr. Murray's case, because of that, I mean, I hope he does face some punishment, because he was there when Michael Jackson died. And, you know, you look at the This Is It video, taken just days and weeks before that. He looked skinny, but he looked healthy.
Right.
He looked energetic. He looked full of life and vim and vinegar. That's the worst evidence against Conrad Murray. When I watched This Is It, I thought, oh boy, this is Conrad Murray's biggest nightmare. Look how vibrant Michael Jackson looks. So I think he should be punished. I think every doctor that overprescribes or allows themselves to be used to add to other doctors' prescriptions should have to face some sort of punishment. Otherwise, it's just going to keep happening, right?
Yeah, no consequences. They're going to keep doing it because they think they can. Diane Diamond's here. I'd love to have your frequent flyer miles. You're on the road all the time.
I'm going to Hawaii in April with my husband, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay. But you and Robin Sachs, I think, probably are never home. You spend most of your time on an airplane. But tell us what you're going to be up to, and what can we expect to see from you on Entertainment Tonight in the near future?
Well, I think a little bit more tomorrow on ET of my long, long interview I did with Andrew Young today. I've spoken to him all along, but this was a real sit-down, come on, let's talk about the whole topic. I'm very interested in Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
You know, he yesterday pleaded not guilty in an Aspen courtroom to domestic violence against his wife, while apparently they were both high, either on liquor or drugs. That will be very interesting. I've talked to the DA there, and he indicates he's not taking a plea from Charlie Sheen or anybody else who comes into Aspen and commits a crime.
Good.
So that could be interesting in a lot of respects. Will he be found guilty? Will he go to jail? Will he lose his very, very popular show, Two and a Half Men?
Yeah.
So I want to watch that. And Tiger Woods.
Oh, yeah, right.
Coming back for the Masters. Gosh, I'd love to be there for that, but I'm not sure they're going to let me in.
Absolutely. That should be interesting. Listen, you stay safe down there. Again, put your water wings and your life vest on and stay out of the storm.
Oh, Dana, my pleasure. Always a thrill talking to you. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh.
That's Diane Diamond. You can see her nightly on Entertainment Tonight on every single cable channel that's out there. And make sure and check out her webpage and check out her column on The Daily Beast. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is The Dana Pretzer Show. We're going to come back and have Blink from Blink on Crime with an update on our old friends, the Anthonys, and what's going on with that case. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We shall return. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Of course, our sister blog, Blink on Crime, is one of the best out there when it comes to reporting high-profile crime cases. They get right down in the mud, and they dig around, and they tell the story that isn't told in other places. And, of course, the head person there, the head kahuna, whatever that means, is Blink. Hi, Blink.
Good evening, Dana. How are you?
Good. What the hell's a kahuna, anyway? That's something in Hawaii, isn't it? A pineapple or something?
I don't know, but I think if you go towards Italia, it's probably not a nice thing to call somebody.
Oh, gee, I'm sorry. I don't mean to do that. It's a Canadian thing. We don't know what we're talking about half the time.
Understood. How are you, friend?
Oh, I'm doing good. And you know, one of the saddest cases out there, and one of the probably the most covered cases here on this show next to Natalie Holloway, was the Anthony case. And I can remember interviewing Cindy Anthony and the hair on the back of my neck standing up a couple of times, and talking to George Anthony, although he wouldn't come on the air, and looking at this whole story and reading it right from the get-go, like, this is goofy. And your blog has covered it right from stem to stern. You've done a great job, and you've got a few updates you'd like to share with us tonight. Go for it.
I do. Thanks, Dana. Yeah, if you can. You know, we're going on 18 months on this case, and just when I think, you know, there might be a lull or there might be, you know, some semblance of sanity, it just turns right back into what I'll call a circus-like atmosphere. And what's odd is the timing, because, you know, we've got a trial date of May 11th,
right.
May of 2011. So when you see this behavior and kind of stunts, if you will, you know it's coming down to some critical element, because it's just unnecessary right about now. And a little while ago I predicted that Casey's felony convictions were going to be the start of the problems that in the funding that was going to happen for her defense in her murder case. So I'll start with what I'll call the shenanigans in terms of new developments. A young woman's sister came forward. I believe her name, she said, was Sky Benhida.
Right.
Was the sister of a woman whose name was River Benhida. I don't think anybody is clear as of today what their actual names are, and I don't know that they've been deceptive other than not wanting to speak, you know, publicly with their own name and, you know, have the invasive type stuff that's going on right now. But apparently, the woman who's, from the best that I can tell, her name is Crystal Cruz or Crystal Holloway, has been having an affair with George Anthony. Since about really July to 2008, you know, not far after Kaylee had been missing, apparently George had approached her through a Kid Finders event. She was a volunteer of sorts, and there's allegations that there is actually money that has changed hands. Brad Conway came out today and made a brief statement, which, to be honest, since I know him to be a person, you know, that's credible and integrity, it was a bit knee-jerk. I was surprised. He said, George denies the affair, and if there was any money exchanged, she may have donated to the fund. Well, as soon as I heard that, I mean, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know what's going on. You know, my team covered, we've got a 90-page report. I think it was in September of 2008 when we saw, you know, the charitable contributions that were being solicited from the public for really any purpose on behalf of the Anthonys, and it was a recipe for disaster at that time. But to see it to come full circle, and to see, you know, sadly, I do believe this woman was victimized. Now, do I think she's a saint? That's not for me to say. What I do think is that she's a pawn, you know, how I call it getting cronked.
and you know, I'll just interrupt for a second. I got to in between coughs here, and I apologize to the audience for that. But when you look at these attorneys for the Anthony family, either Mark Najem or Conway, I think both you know, stand-up guys, and they're doing, you know, a defense attorney's job or an attorney's job is a no-win situation, no matter who you are and what you're doing in a lot of cases. But, you know, Conway, I feel sorry for, but this whole family, I'm not sure what they were like beforehand. Obviously, Casey Anthony had mega issues for a long, long time, but this whole thing is just so sad because they've pretty much imploded, have they not?
They have, but as I covered, you know, a couple, when the raw data from the laptop computer from the home and also the desktop came out, and I did a piece on, you know, I actually had a team do an analysis on it to find out that, you know, George has some serious problems in terms of escort sites and women. I mean, I personally determined four different finance accounts. I mean, you can literally see it in the navigation, Dana. I can see selecting a site. I could see him picking a date. I mean, the gentleman was not web savvy if he was looking to, you know, hide behavior like that. And I'm not picking on George. I don't know the dynamic.
No.
You know, as we cover these cases, we know there's, you know, there's three stories. There's his, hers, and the truth.
That's right.
And so I do think it's very deep. I do think there has been this, teaching within this family that on the outside we appear one way, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, and that's No, that's true. That's a good way of putting it. If you're just tuning in, Blink is here from BlinkOnCrime.com, our sister blog when it comes to crime reporting. The Anthony case, like you say, and I think you said it very well, it seems like just when you think there's a lull, all of a sudden it keeps going, and something else pops up. But not only that, her defense attorneys are also playing the media the best they can, and I guess any defense attorney will do that. Joel Brodsky with Drew Peterson is an expert at it because they think that it's going to somehow help their client. But, you know, May 11th or May 2011, whatever that is, I got this strange feeling it's not even going to happen then. Do you see a plea deal coming out here in the next little while?
I do, Dana. I think, and that's very astute of you, I think a couple things. I think that this particular situation with this woman and George, I believe it was contrived through the defense team.
Yep.
Because I think what's happening is exactly what we've predicted all along. Somebody's got to go under the bus. Somebody's got to, you know, what I'll call like a parallel defense. You know, the defense, Jose Baez isn't going to actually give the impression he's mounting the possibility of her copping to a plea, saying it was an accident, she covered it up, you know, through the application of the duct tape, etc. But they do have to somewhat prepare the jury pool so that, you know, if they tend to proffer or have that conversation, you know, people aren't in complete shock.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also, I think it's financial. I think that Thursday's hearing regarding Casey's indigent status is heavy, you know, on the minds of people. And frankly, I'm just irate that the taxpayers of Florida would have to fund this girl's defense. And I'm not talking about going forward. I'm talking about the fact that if you read the motion, they're saying that would be Jose Baez and Andrea Lyon are saying Casey Anthony, who has not held a job since 2000, I believe the first quarter of 2006, she hasn't had an income, was able to foot the bill for $110,000 of legal fees. If you read the motion, he's specifying the money comes from her. Now, unless there's some kind of, you know, verbal check service in prison, that doesn't even, you know, make sense. Because they would have to indicate through her trust account or, you know, it's shady.
Yeah.
It's given the appearance, you know, I think he's just really gotten by with, you know, the find the nut under my cup trick for so long. And I really think that in the beginning, you know, he was only a criminal defense attorney for 3 years. He's what's considered within the Florida bar a new lawyer.
Right.
Now, just because he's gotten, you know, the Oscar-winning case, if you will, probably not a good analogy, in his career, and he yields this sword around there right now, it still does not change the fact that if you believe that the girl that has hired 9 different attorneys, world-class, mind you, okay, you've got Todd Macaluso, who doesn't get out of bed without a $100,000 attorney, or excuse me, a retainer. And in that, who is facing an agreement to suspend his license this April, in their filing, Jose Baez's filing, they're saying that he was not paid.
Wow.
Okay? They're saying Dr. Henry Lee,
yep,
who did an analysis, who has discoverable work product in this case, they're saying he was not paid a fee. Dr. Larry Kobolinsky, Kobe, from Nancy Grace, was retained as an analyst for that case. They're saying he wasn't paid. Terry Lenneman, death penalty-rated attorney, worked on the case. They're saying he wasn't paid. Mike Walsh, they're saying he wasn't paid. Jonathan Kaysen, the civil attorney. And then you have Linda Kenny Bodden.
Yeah.
I think I got everybody.
I think so, yeah.
In there. So in their filing, they're saying there's only 2 lawyers for Casey Anthony that have been paid, and that to the tune of $110,000.
Yeah.
That is preposterous.
Well, I think they need to get Casey a checkbook. I'm sure she'd write some to them. I don't know whose checkbook, as long as it's not yours or mine. Blank is here from Blink on Crime. When you look at these attorneys, and I had Henry Lee on the show a few weeks back, and I tried to get him to talk about the Anthony case, and of course he's not going to, and he told me he couldn't talk about it. But all the high-profile side of it, and I think they're banking on a lot of coverage, a lot of PR for their companies, because they all have companies. But if this goes to a plea deal, and we don't have the 6-week trial and True TV or Court TV or whatever the hell they call themselves nowadays, covering it nonstop, Nancy Grace, etc., a lot of these high-profile people are going to be a little bit choked, because this is not an OJ case, or it just might be.
Right. I think that's a very good point. And I think what you're seeing is somebody trying to impress that point, because what I think, there's 2 strategies. If I'm to look at this at 30,000 feet, if I'm defending this case, and in terms of rights and in terms of marketability, what I think we see is you've got a year out, and what has started to happen is it's kind of like this circus-like atmosphere where it really, you know, the 2 markets are Springer or Howard Stern.
Right.
So your market focus decreases. The piece of your pie is a lot smaller, and companies are going to do the risk reward strategy. They're going to, you know, when I say companies, I mean media. They're going to say, "Gee, do we risk being found out that we paid X, you know, for the interview or for the rights, if our viewing audience is only a portion of that?" So I think you're seeing a little bit of that trend where it's just outrageous, and people are going to tune it out, as opposed to, and I sincerely hope that doesn't happen, because my goal is to restore the legacy of Kaylee Marie Anthony.
Absolutely.
She's a baby, 34 months old, and she is alleged to have been murdered by her own mother.
Yep.
And whether or not that actually occurred, or there was some type of other accident gone wrong, which is my personal belief, that she did something, you know, in a split-second situation, and she tried to cover it up, which does not excuse it.
No.
But she left her out there in the bog.
Yep.
And I'll never get past that. But the point is, everybody needs to know that this can't happen, that this happens to this child and then this family makes money.
Yeah.
And the media makes money. It can't look like a scenario that's optimistic to people in any social economic situation. The takeaway has to be, oh my God, you know, I'm a parent of a young girl who's a single parent who, you know, is reckless, who is living their life a certain way, and I need to know that I can't enable that person.
Smart.
That I have to protect my grandchild first.
Yep.
and I have to let them do whatever they're going to do on their own.
Yep.
Would it have worked in this case? I don't know, but I think it's a better takeaway and a better lesson for people that are in that than I'm 21 and I don't appreciate the fact that I have a young child. I have no other choice, so bye-bye.
Yeah.
And it works out. You know, that's just not reality, and that shouldn't be. It should be about this little girl that lost her life in the crossfire here, and she should be honored. It shouldn't be about, you know, attorneys that are going to, you know, be fat, dumb, and happy because people care about her, because that's the reality.
Yep.
People are compassionate for this child to the point where they're paying attention to every piece of news coverage, and right now the people that are benefiting are the defense attorneys, the Anthonys, and the media.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Always well said. There's only one true victim in this case, and it's Kaylee Marie Anthony. Thank you, Blink.
Thank you. Be well, Dana.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. We'll see you again real soon here on the Dana Pretzer Show.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.